asking. So Michael and I will be traveling on Friday, and so we're going to do a pre-recorded show of the Beatitudes Part 1. We are going to the beach with Michael J. and Krista and their families and see the three granddaughters that we don't get to see very often. And we'll be a week with them, but we will be doing the show live for the exception of Friday when we're traveling to get there, and then the next Friday when we're traveling to get back. So, well, I'll be coming back here to Bristol. Michael will be going on to Sarasota, Florida. If you don't know, you can go to our schedules, and you can either scroll down, you know, to events, or you can go to schedules and live events, and there's a flyer and all the information. Michael will be doing a 3-day Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Sarasota, Florida at the office of Dr. John LaRance. It's called Advanced Rejuvenation. All that information and the flyer is on the website, and you can pick that up. And then also, just to be aware that Michael is also now doing 3-day one-on-one. It's called Quantum Still Point Intensives. And that also is under schedule and under events. You can pick it up either place and get information about that. So opening different opportunities for people to take the work a little bit deeper. If you know of anyone that's in the Sarasota, Florida area or that would be willing to travel to there, please pass that information along to them so that they can participate with Michael there. I'll be coming back here to Bristol and taking care of Aria because the other set of grandparents are off on a cruise, so somebody has to be here. Anyway. Added just a few different things. The article's not complete yet. As soon as Michael completes it, I will be sending out a newsletter with the article in it. I'll also create a page on the website and put it out there so that people can access it. And you say, what article? Well, yes, was it day before yesterday? Michael read an article that he has been writing, and it's on, let's see, I was just making sure of the day that he started reading that. Yes. So you can go back to Monday's show and listen to him read it. Or was it? Now I'm doubting myself of when he read it. So I'm looking. Michael, if you're on, please correct me. Was it day before yesterday? I've been packing and doing so much that my mind's in different directions. I apologize for that. Yeah, I believe that it was Monday, April the 22nd. So I was trying to skip back through the notes on the radio show to see when it was that you read the article. But it will be on the website when he completes it, which should just be today or tomorrow. Welcome, Michael.
Hopefully. I'm still refining some of the concepts in it and retitling it. So I apologize. I'm not a fast writer. Anyway, welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. We get to take the conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness to the next level. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. One of the things, you know, from the article, and there have been quite a few questions about it, quite a bit of conversation, and I'm actually kind of playing with perhaps putting a whole other concept in there. You know, when you read through, and I've listened to several different videos on the Book of Daniel and such, and it's interesting that the core principles of healing are there. But if you read through that whole book, it is one book of just absolute mass confusion. And what occurred to me
did you mean Job?
Oh, Job, I mean, pardon me. Job, yes, of course. Excuse me. Thank you, sweetie. One of the things that has become clear to me is that, and the book is, you know, perfectly done, Because here's this guy, Job, who in every way he can possibly imagine, except in the arena where he's ignorant, he's impeccable. Absolutely impeccable. Like, you know, he's the classic, how could bad things happen to good people? And when some crazy stuff starts to happen, he goes into mass confusion, as most everybody does when they go into any form of a disease process, whether it's physical disease, mental, emotional, relational, financial, business. And he goes searching. And so what happens in the book of Job? You know, his troubles start, all his friends come, and everybody's got an opinion. Everybody who knows nothing about healing has an opinion. And they go to blaming God, and they blame Job, and it's this, and it's that, and it's that. And it's interesting, because Job arrived at the answer within minutes of these events happening, of these tragedies occurring. But his mind just glossed right over it. And I mean, literally, it's a long book. If you go on YouTube, you can listen to it being read to you. And the shortest reading time, I think, was about an hour and 40 minutes or something. There's a lot of text in there. And the whole thing is just about the kind of confusion that people go through trying to understand why something's happened in their lives. And to me, what I see the article as being is helping people to build the brain cells for the principles of healing so that the principle becomes obvious. And where his healing occurs, you know, the whole book, we've talked about this over and over again, the power person dynamic. What's the number one pseudo solution of the non-being mind? If I could just figure this out, I'll figure it out in my brain, and if I can't, then Eliphaz will figure it out for me, or whatever the other guys are. Three friends come and they do a couple of rounds of conversation. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got somebody to blame, and virtually the whole conversation, I mean, right down to where it's blaming God. Where does the healing happen? The healing happens. Remember Yeshua said the power of life and death is in our words? You read that whole book and the healing happens when two things occur. Job recognizes that he has a habit, and his habit is his fear that his children aren't going to do it right. I mean, they say this is his habit. He does this all the time. And then, as I say, very early in the book, he says, oh, that which I feared most has come upon me. That's what I dread. It's happened. And then he goes on because he has no idea. He's told himself what the problem is. And he listens to all these people, and there's a big conversation with God. Job blames God. I mean, the whole thing. But again, listen to Yeshua, the power of life and death is in our words. His healing happened, I mean, of an hour and 45 minutes or so to read the text. Within the last three lines, or four lines, whatever it is, he does two things that set him on a healing path, and everything's rectified. The first thing he does is he takes his words back. Then, what it says is he becomes a space of conscious, active, present love for his friends. Now, they say he prays for his friends. And there's a big misunderstanding about that word, prayer. Most everybody's, you know, we're putting order into the cosmic gift catalog, and it certainly sounds like that's where it's going. But in Aramaic, prayer means to set a trap for God, to literally And when you realize the Creator is love, and in Him, in that energy field, we live, move, and have our being. And because two energy fields interact, there's a transfer of energy. But the transfer of energy from that field in which we live, move, and have our being to the state of being where we are the presence of love, and that's where the resonance happens, they classified that as the still small voice. Because it's subtle, it's quiet. And with all the noise, I mean, you read through the book and all the noise of all these friends, and I mean, his wife even says, why don't you just kill yourself? And literally, that's what she says. Gee, you're in such terrible shape here. Why don't you just curse the Creator and kill yourself? All the noise, all the confusion, all of the conversation that has nothing whatsoever to do with the principles of healing. He realizes it was his words. He takes them back. And then he chooses to go to a space of connected, active, present love. And everything turns around. What do most people do? Oh, they go to Eliphaz, and they go to this neighbor, and they go to that neighbor, and they go to mom, and they go to dad, and they go to son, and their heads roll and rock and try to figure it out. It took 2,000 years for somebody to come forward. Maybe closer to 2,200 years. He was approximately 2,280, they estimate. So it took about 2,200 years for somebody to come forward and say, here is the core of how you heal. First of all, you recognize the power of life and death is in your word. And you recognize that what you ask for, you have a contract with the Creator, and the Creator is obligated to give it to you. And of course, we've got lots of conversation. Well, it was God's will, you know. Well, God did it to me. I guess I'll just have to live with it. And when he went to the space of connected love, when he corrected his words, his life turned around. If you got the eyes to see and the ears to hear that, it's a powerful piece of work. So we're hoping that, I should say I'm working toward getting that all in a way that it's clear enough that somebody who doesn't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. Now you've got to have the brain cells. Yeshua talks about, you know, he who having eyes does not see, who having ears does not perceive. If you don't have the brain cells, you can't recognize what it is you're looking at. You know, there's a joist sitting over there on the desk. And most people would walk in and look at the device and go, well, there's some wires and there's some glass. And there's some metal container. Well, that's a metal thing with wires and glass. Somebody else who's got the eyes to see and the ears to hear, the brain cells looks at it and goes, oh, there's an X-ray machine. But if you don't have those eyes and ears, you don't see an X-ray machine when you look at an X-ray machine. I mean, you see one, but your brain can't give you an accurate definition of what it is unless you've got the brain cells where your mind can replicate that. And then the flip side of that coin, of course, is to recognize if your mind can replicate something, then you've got the brain cells for it. And if it's based in hostility and fear, you better get cleaning it out because it's going to have an impact. You want to withdraw those words from your mind. Want to forgive that content from your mind to be freed of whatever that is that your mind can see. And build the brain cells for what does healing look like? What are the principles? What are the principles by which this universe operates? There's so much when we it really applies so deeply to this whole work we're doing with the Enlightenment book and the Aramaic. We're on page 83. Well, let me, before I go there, let's ask Jeannie if there's anybody on the phone. Cue the hand up. Or... Anything in the chat room, sweetie?
It's all quiet on this end.
Cool. So we're on page 83 in the manuscript. And there's a note under the word home. And you gotta have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. Otherwise, things just don't make sense. So if we look at the note about a third of the way down the page, it's actually speaking about a passage from Matthew in the Beatitudes, where the first Beatitude, we're told by the Greeks, says, blessed are they who are poor in spirit. Now, when you're listening to the teachings of a man who's said, you could deny me, but don't deny that spirit that I came to connect you with, it's a pretty big stretch to start telling somebody that's supposed to be poor in that thing that she said was most important to connect with. And as subtle a difference as this changes the whole meaning of that text, of that one beatitude. So, phonetic dots in Aramaic, in the text, over second letter indicates it should be pronounced as an A. This change in phonics, without a change in spelling, changes the meaning from poor to home. Phonic dots came into the Aramaic script around the end of the first century, indicating Matthew was rendered into Greek prior to the time and without benefit of the phonetic markings. So the markings weren't there. You just had to know the context of what you were reading in order to pronounce the word correctly. So we hear the Greeks render this instruction, the first beatitude. Blessed are they who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. In Aramaic, what we hear is a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession, you whose home is in the eternal forces from God, or the Ruka Dikutcha. For you will inhabit, or you will live in, the community of love, kingdom of heaven. Now, you know, what a difference two little dots on a page make. I mean, which world would you rather live in? One where you were brought up saying, blessed are you who are poor in spirit, for yours is the kingdom of heaven, or there's a latent neural structure in you implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, and it becomes your conscious possession if you live in, if you have your home in eternal forces from the Creator rather than in your head. And we look at that whole book of Job, and we got a bunch of people who were all in their heads, all trying to figure it out, all in a thing called perception, which is nothing but a reflection of something from the past. By its very definition, the fact that something is perceived by the mind means the mind has made up a construct about it. And the mind makes its constructs out of the content of this body-mind unit, this carbon-based system that we call the body-mind unit. In order to reflect the content, obviously the content had to be there, which means everything we see in perception is from the past. Now, we can, correcting the mind, get it to the point where it will give us accurate information about what's going on in the world, but it still can't give us what's going on in the world, the actuality. It can only give you your mind's interpretation, your mind's construct out of what's resonated from the past in you. what we're looking to do is to free people, you know, we've said it over and over, in order to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. To free people from the mind so that we can literally be alive in our higher senses at every moment and experience from a connected space of love, because that's the first law that keeps the mind on track. Remember when they said to Yeshua, what's most important in the law? He said, have Rachma filter in the frontal lobes of the brain. That allows your mind to only use data to form its intentions, data that's based in love. So we get to move toward the actuality instead of living in the cheap copy that the mind has. And if you read Job, this is what came clear to me actually this morning. I was working on the writing, and what became clear was, oh, that's it. Why is this whole conversation with Job? I mean, they go through this and that, and I mean, it just goes such a long, drawn-out conversation. Trying to figure it out. Can't figure it out, but you can forgive it. You can always collapse pain perception and bring the parts of the mind that hold data based in hostility or fear forward in the presence of love for healing. And as you do that, your home will not be in your mind, as this particular beatitude instructs. Your home will be in the actuality, in the eternal forces from the Creator, Rukh Dikutcha. And, you know, that'd be comparable to, let's imagine, you know, we've got somebody who has, they were brought up with a computer in front of them, and they can't do any behavior without going to what the computer screen shows them and tells them, and can only do what the computer screen instructs them to do. Obviously, if it's on a computer screen, it's in, from the past in the computer. And it's not actual. It's the same thing with the human mind. Great device, useful, has its place. It just can't give you the taste or the experience of actuality. That's why it's so important to understand how to collapse it. And then you rest in, no matter what's going on in your world. You know, I can remember being a kid and seeing pictures of the saints and in their suffering, you know, an arrow in the back or whatever. I was like, how is that possible? Now I know how it's possible. Those people were not living in their body's minds. They were living in the actuality, and in the actuality, there's full contact with serenity and the active presence of love, whatever's happening in the world. It's a mind that injects all of that other stuff. You know, there's a whole field, and this was another piece. I'm, as I say, I'm working on reorganizing the title a little bit. There's a whole field of conflict resolution. That's a pseudo-solution of the non-being mind. It's not a, now, can conflict resolution be a benefit? Oh, absolutely, sure. If there's a big conflict going on, you can resolve it. Hey, cool. But did you heal anything? Healing that's important. It's not the conflict resolution. There's never going to be an end to conflict in the world. There's never going to be an end to war in the world, because war and conflict are constructs of the mind, unless we know how to rid ourselves of those constructs of the mind. There's where the solution to war is. People are going, oh, we need another accord. Let's get another group of people together and let's see if we can resolve this conflict. Okay, so there's an issue and resolve it. So what? You haven't resolved conflict, because conflict is a construct in the mind. And you haven't resolved the resultant wars that happen when there are conflicts until you resolve that structure in the mind, until you forgive that structure in the mind. How do you do that? You give up words, as Job did in just those last few lines of the text. Give up those words of hostility and fear. other words, you claim your human life. And the mind wants to jump in with all its stories and all its, you know, all those conversations, that whole, you know, hour and a half of conversations. Now pick up the tools, do the work, collapse the mind, be out of your mind, and all of a sudden you're being guided by the eternal forces, literally from the Creator. And so, we have pretty much covered the, maybe missed some of my notes, covered the dictionary in the text. And so, let's open the floor and see if we have anybody out there with a question. Call in number if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you. It's 563-999-3581. You call that number, you're listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, G will recognize you have something to share. And she'll introduce you by your area code. So if you're out there in listener land, which one? Let's have a conversation.
It's all quiet.
Miss Jeannie, do we have anything exciting happening out there?
Nope, it's all quiet here.
Everybody's quiet today, okay. I was hoping we might be able to open some conversation.
I will announce we have 11 more what's called shorts on our YouTube channel. These are less than 60-second clips. Most of them are around 30 or 45 seconds. Please give them a watch. And if you watch something, whether it's a short or a video, give a like as well. You know, we'll look at the statistics on the YouTube, and we're within 500 watches of being able to be monetized on the shorts. So we could use your support in that direction. And there'll be like 400 and some people have watched one short and only 2 people have liked it. You know, so clicking like helps.
For sure.
Oh, we have a hand
and
up.
Going in and listening to, you know, we've got Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The whole workshop is now on the website. There's the explanation of how the worksheet works. There are hundreds of videos. And so it would be awesome if you folks could take some time, give a listen, and click a like, join the channel, and you've got a caller, so let's say hello.
Okay, and also, you know, you can click them and then go about doing other things at your home and listen. It's not that you have to sit in front of the screen the whole time. And our hand up, I believe, is Sunny 765. You're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
Hey.
How are you? What's on your mind today?
A little curious. Which Aramaic manuscript would you suggest, and where might a person locate that as we're doing our work with you too?
Well, actually, what we're going through and what we've done over the last 60 days or so is we've been going through a book we published called Enlightenment. It's what we published so far from the Kabor's manuscript. So if you want a copy of that, if you go to our website, you can go to our catalog and order it. But when you order it, it charges shipping automatically. We can't change that. But for those who are listening to the show, we've put out that we'll pay the shipping on it. So if you just go to whyagain.org, and at the bottom of the page, there's a donate button. The text is $25. PayPal charges whatever they charge, 3 or 4%, whatever it is. And so if you click the donate button and just do a donation of $26, we'll pay the shipping and we'll get it up to you right away if you want a copy of it.
And so that's
what we're working from, and then Enlightenment. So if you just if you do that donation and just put your name and address in and say, you know, it's for Enlightenment, then we'll know what it's for and we'll get it off to you and pay the shipping.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. I was just my fiance is here, and he's done a great deal of work, like about 25 years study in the Hebrew and reflecting back and forth with Aramaic and the relationships thereof, and just now introducing you to him, was curious as to the materials by which you function, or, you know, your baseline, you know, and functioning
right
from there. That would be the Gaboris manuscript.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah, the Gaboris is a manuscript that was found. It's actually called the Gaboris because it was found in the Kaibor River in Turkey back in the 1970s. By my partner, who you've heard me speak of before, Dan McDougall. He had sent an expedition there to find a complete Aramaic manuscript, and it's a copy of a 164 AD text. We've actually had the manuscript itself carbon dated twice at the University of Arizona, and they tell us that it's from approximately 1000 AD, plus or minus the actual vellum that it's printed on or been copied to, and the imprimatur on it says it's text from approximately 164 AD, so it makes it a copy of the oldest known New Testament. It's just the New Testament in Aramaic, and the translation work was done back in the 70s by a group of about 25 of the world's top Aramaicists, with a focus on, in particular, what were the psychological meanings, what was going on with the mind, what did they know about the mind, and, you know, that's me, it's been the most profound and impactful thing to understand how this human mind works, is the understanding from the Aramaic goes so many light years beyond anything that we find today in the culture. It's just amazing, you know, stuff that they under, you know, they talk about old fogies in the desert. How did they know that? Well, psychiatry, psychology hasn't even started to catch up with what they understood about mindsets, how the mind operated. You know, again, you look at the Beatitudes and the whole Beatitudes. I can remember being a kid, and it was kind of like, well, the Beatitudes were this sort of this nice philosophy, but when you go to the Aramaic, what you find is it's actually a set of instructions. And the instructions are how to activate a latent neural structure in the mind that's been hidden. How to bring it back to the surface, bring it back to awareness. And so that opening word, tuvehun, in Aramaic is a three-part word and basically says, you know, there's a guidance system in you that's latent, that's hidden from you, and here are the steps. Here's what it'll take to resonate, to bring it back to activity in your mind. And so it's the same with the Lord's Prayer is, go to that in the Aramaic. Actually, if you go to our YouTube channel, there's a video on the Lord's Prayer. And what you find is it's not a prayer at all. Most people are shocked when I say that. It's like, because they do it every Sunday morning. It's like, what do you mean it's not a prayer? Well, let's go back and listen to what happened there. Obviously, the disciples were somewhat confused because they asked a question, something they didn't know about. They knew all about it. They obviously wouldn't have asked. And they said, teach us to pray. They obviously didn't know what that meant. Or they wouldn't have asked the question. And then, you know, I use the example of, let's imagine you come to me and say, Michael, I understand you're a voice coach and a singing teacher. Would you teach me to sing? Would I be teaching you to sing if I sang a song? No, of course not. I mean, you might learn something from my singing, but if I were going to teach you to sing, I'd be talking about, you know, this, your throat and your breath and your diaphragm and, you know, how to sing. So the disciples don't say, Yeshua, say a prayer. They say, teach us to pray. They don't know. They're obviously, there's some confusion about the idea. And so the word prayer in Aramaic is to set a trap for God, which sounds kind of strange in our culture. But when you realize that, say, for instance, the TV antenna on your roof, if you like to watch Channel 2, and that TV antenna is oriented properly, it's the right shape antenna, it's a trap for Channel 2. It brings the signal of Channel 2 into the TV, and the TV pours out this beautiful picture and sound into your home because there's a trap for that signal. Well, in exactly the same way, you know, the what was called the Lord's Prayer, it was a set of instructions for here's how you align yourself in order to become, to capture and pour out into the world the energy field of love in which you live, move, and have your being. That's what you're designed for. So it changes so many basic things when you have that Aramaic understanding. It's just monumental. The way the mind works, Rachma, you know, a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain keeps the brain on track with love. Kuba, a filter in the back of the brain that keeps your perception on track with love. There are just so many things that don't even start to come through in the Greek translations of the scriptures. So that's what we're working from, and there's some of the foundation of it. Hope it makes sense and fits. Yeah.
It does. It brings about yet another question.
Good.
So about the past year, the expression, and with having more exposure through here that into the Hebrew, the expression or terminology of the screen in Hebrew, and it's what? Masak, or the screen. Would that be much like the filter that you were referring to in Aramaic?
Well, I'm wondering in what context is that word used? I could imagine that perception would be referred to in the Hebrew as a screen. Now, there's some interesting, let's see if this relates. There's some interesting Harvard research. It's probably the most, or no, not probably, it is the most quoted research in psychological history. And this research was done at Harvard back in the 50s. And what they showed was, in the laboratory, they've got somebody hooked up to electrodes and they're measuring brain cell firings. And in a time frame where there are approximately 10,000 brain cells firing, the max amount of data that can go into conscious awareness is 9 bits. So you get to see this little tiny bit, 9 bits of data out of 10,000. And it's been estimated that in the same time frame, we're perhaps living in a 20 trillion bit world. So that 9-bit, I refer to it kind of metaphorically as the 9-bit mind. The actual laboratory stats were 7 plus or minus 2. So some people function off as little as 5 bits of data in order to build their perception. And that would be someone you'd say, well, they're kind of slow or not very bright. And up to 9 bits of data would be someone who's working on a genius level. And so I could see where that 9-bit shows up, where the construct of perception shows up, would be referred to as a screen. That makes sense, yes. I don't know if that's the context it's coming from in the Hebrew, but that would make sense for me.
I think the last that we're able to deduce, you know, because Hebrew is finds you, they couldn't make it more complicated if they tried. However, it's like the screen being what you put out should be your best and highest, otherwise garbage gets stuck in the screen. Therefore, what comes back from you when you're receiving, you know, from universe, from creator, what have you, whatever your preference to refer
direct
to.
Direct reflection.
Yes, direct reflection. There you go. Then there's
universe,
nothing clogging up your screen.
Resonance.
Yeah, there's no garbage in your screen, right?
Right. Well, that would be in Aramaic, the filter. When they said to Yeshua, what's most important in the law? And law in Aramaic is not the rule of a superior, as the Greeks would tell us. You know, there's some guy up there that's insisting you better do it this way or you're in big trouble. In Aramaic, law is simply the most important in the way it works to be a human being. And we're told that that Yeshua told them that you're supposed to love your neighbor and love God as you loved yourself, which is totally and completely out in left field. That's one of the problems in the world. I say to people, stop loving your neighbor. Stop loving yourself. It's not even possible to do that because love isn't a verb. It's not something you can do. But instead of saying, love your neighbor, and it's easy once you have the brain cells for what he said to understand how the Greeks made an error there. He said, have rachma for your neighbor. And rachma, again, is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that allows only information from the frontal lobes where intentions are stored that are key to love to become available to awareness. So it filters out everything based in hostility or fear. The negative and the destructive are filtered out by the activity of rachma. And since intentions are the raw material of goals, and this again, you know, this is how the Aramaic understood the mind to work, since intention is the raw material of goals, if rachma is set and everything that you're aware of in the form of intentions are based in love, then your goals have to also be based in love, which means that when you set a goal, the corresponding filter to rachma, which is kubha, is activated. And now only units of perceptual memory in the back of the brain that are key to love can come forward to conscious awareness to form your perception, what comes up on the screen of awareness. And rachma and kubha set together were called perfect love. What did they say? Perfect love casts out fear. The mind can't produce a fear-based reality if rachma and kubha are active. It doesn't matter. I mean, you could be in the middle, cancel the thought of the most tragic, horrific event in history, and you still be connected to love. Because the truth about you is that you are love, and that rachma, that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, is also a gateway that brings love into the human form. If that gateway is closed, then we have what's called a human form, but there's no human being in there because the human being is the created essence of love. And if the gateway shut down, which is what hostility and fear do, you notice if you ever watch somebody and their rages and such, kind of hard to find any love in there because the gateway is closed down. So what Yeshua is saying is first and most important order of business is keep that active. Now your mind is fueled by love and you can't produce a fear-based reality. So now you always have available to you the mind of active present love, which in the ancient teachings was called the mind of Christ. Nothing religious about it. We either live out of a mind of hostility or fear, or we live out of a mind of love. The mind of hostility and fear was called the mind of man. And then there was... And
much man, like the reference that Yeshua gave, I don't know exactly where in passage, but he was asked a question, like, aren't you upset, aren't you? You know, he said, it's not in my store.
Not in my store, yeah. Why don't you give them back some of their own medicine? I have none of that in my store. There's no, don't have any hostility near for to give them, so why would I do that? Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the, and then if you recognize that either in the frontal lobes of the brain or the back of the brain, there is fear, then he has the solution for how to get rid of it, how to literally remove it, and it's called forgiveness. And again, the Greeks turned forgiveness into, okay, I have pain moving inside of me. It's all your fault, but it's okay. I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook for the pain that's moving inside of me, which, of course, does nothing to change the pain that's moving inside of me. So never even attempt or think about loving anyone. Choose to function as love, and then you will automatically cherish, honor, and be of support to anyone you run into. Won't be about loving them, it'll be about functioning from love. And as you do that, everything in the perceptual mind changes, every energetic pattern in physiology changes, diseases disappear. You know, all the crazy things that have gone for generation and generation in our bloodline simply begin to disappear.
Being that silent observer, perhaps, right? Watching everybody.
Well, the silent observer is is the state of being. That's the created essence that we are. And, you know, Yeshua, there's another case where Yeshua talked about, well, in order for you to live, you've got to die. Which, you know, that doesn't make any sense if you don't understand what's being defined in the Aramaic context. What he's saying is, in order for you being silent observer, created essence of love, to function through this body-mind unit, this self you, the world has taught you you are, the self based in hostility and fear and terror and trauma and drama, that self has to die. How do you make that self die? It's done through forgiveness. You remove the root of the false self that he said had to die. And as that false self, literally as the energetic patterns of the false self are weakened, it literally dissipates and disappears. And it's then the whole energy system is run by your created human essence, which is love. Human being. And the observer inhabits the form, and the whole game changes.
The false self is maybe commonly referred to as the ego.
Ego, yes. Ego, edging God, love out.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Hey, delighted. Does that all make sense from the Hebrew context that you're looking at?
Yes, beautiful reflection. And yeah, they're not that far apart. I'm doing some research. It just occurred to me to like dig into that. And it is stated somewhere, I don't know how accurate it may be, that either way, the Hebrew is, or it was stated that Aramaic was a dialect of Hebrew. And then, therefore, Hebrew could be a dialect of Aramaic. So,
yeah, you know, that's something that there's still, I think, the jury's out on that. It's been said that the Hebrew is actually a daughter language to the Aramaic. I'm not sure whether that's true or not. I have understood that to be true in the past, but I've seen evidence that has me question that. And but what I do understand is that it was the language, you know, like today, pretty much throughout the world, wherever you go, business is done in English. It's the lingua franca of the world. In, you know, 2,000 years ago, you could go from the Middle East to the Great Wall of China, and that was, Aramaic was the lingua franca. That's what the common people spoke. That was the language of business. That which is what was done. You know, for 3,000 years, the Persian Empire lived in peace with their neighbors under the Aramaic language. Hebrew, as I understand it, temple, it was temple scrolls, but Aramaic was what the people worked with in the streets, and that's where Yeshua taught, was in the common language of the people, which was Aramaic.
Yeah, yes. And it's much like, you know, Spanish-speaking people, depending on their region of, you know, geographical region, they're going to have a different dialect. You can take, you know, the Spanish-speaking people from Texas, Spanish-speaking people from Mexico, and then those from Spain, put all three of them together, and they can't communicate with each other because they're all speaking a different dialect of what is said to be the same language.
I've never had that problem being here in the South.
I've experienced it, and I've, you know, again, it's, you know, people in Spain do not speak the same kind of Spanish. People in Mexico, it's the first form of that what is said to be the Spanish language, Spanish. It's quite a thing. So I'm excited to see where we expand our vocabularies in many ways.
Yeah. Winston Churchill is quoted as having said, "We have the privilege of being separated by a common language." And until you get people to harmonize the definitions of their words. It was Plato that said, "Let me define the words, I'll end the argument." Because different people have different brain cells or a particular grunt that's made in any language, it fires different brain cells from different people. And so everybody has different meanings, different realities within their minds. And when we free ourselves from the hostility and fear-based distortions, then all of a sudden things start to line up and start to make more sense.
Yes, which is yet another one of your workshops of, did you hear what I think I said?
Communication, did you hear what I think I said? Yes.
Yes.
Actually, over the period of the last 3 years or so, we've done two different codependence to interdependence communication practicums, and we combine them into a self-study, and we spend quite a bit of time. You know, the last time that you saw the communication worksheet, the communication rules worksheet that we put out, which again is going to be 7 or 8 years ago, it was a one page, and for the 25 or so years that I taught that workshop, it was always a one page workshop. But in this self-study intensive that we did on Zoom online, we put together two intensives. The lady who was the example, she and her partner did a responsibility communication process in the intensive. Got this all on video. And for several years, she'd been at Heartland. She'd worked with the tools, and communication was her favorite tool. Well, because of her having that as her favorite tool and really working with it, out of that intensive, a one-page worksheet that had been in existence for 25 years was changed into 3 pages in that workshop. It really, I mean, her inquiry, her questioning, her having worked with it, and then bringing it up in the intensive really changed the whole game on the communication, the responsibility communication workshop.
Absolutely beautiful, Michael. Absolutely beautiful.
All right.
I'm awesome. So grateful for our reconnection and looking forward to here maybe in a day or two so I can set my focus, if we could, if you have a moment available with Jeannie. We'll put together some stuff. So both ways, I'll get things rolling and see where your interest may or may not lie. And at least,
do you have any recordings?
I truly don't, because we'll familiarize when we were able to private phone conversation, familiarize the setting that I would be inviting you to share in. The people are very ready, but they're kind of all over the board, don't have the proper tools, and that's where you are needed. This work, of course, definitely needed all over the world, and the initial vocabulary there from them, the intention is there, I just don't have the tools. And it would be, I would just say, right, from the first, a minimum of 50 people present, and you know how that beautiful word spreads. And then if you decide to choose utilizing that particular format, that would be the onslaught of building that audience in that direction, then introducing that new format outwardly into the rest of your world, and just another avenue of approach, because we got to reach them all if we can't.
But you don't have any audios or videos that you can just send me a link to that I can give a quick listen so I get more sense of it?
No,
build some brain cells.
What I can do is get you in there and walk you through, get you into the audio part of that tool, and just kind of, you know, introduce you to a few people, and use just an app in your phone. If it's not for you, just give it the click, you know.
Yep.
And God will take it there. But you'll need more information than you're functioning from, and then we won't burden your audience with that now.
And it'll be a couple of weeks, honey, because we're getting ready to leave Friday morning early for vacation, and then Michael's going to Florida. So it'll be a little while.
Okay. Well, the idea was to do a quick run through, if we can, on a phone conversation for maybe, you know, us. It may take us a minute.
We've got so much on our plate between now and then. It'll be at least a couple of weeks before we can do that.
Okay. So I was hoping to get the stage ready for you and have you at least be a guest and see how that goes for you. And kind of time is beautiful right now. Thank
put
you.
Out some of those links and we'll see what develops.
All righty.
Cool.
All right.
All right. Blessings.
Uh-huh.
All right, Ms. Jeannie, we've got about 5 minutes left. Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything else happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet. There was a comment in the Podbean that listening to Sunny talk, they said, the holy sibling talking is quite grounded. Great inner work.
Cool. Sweet. So if we go to page 42 in the text, that's where we left off. And we're on, so that's from the book of, let me turn back here. So we're in Matthew 5. We've been through the Beatitudes. There are some videos on our YouTube channel for the Beatitudes, as well as the last 60 or so shows covering this material.
And those are the Beatitudes part one is what's going to play on Friday while we're traveling. And then depending on how the schedule goes, part two, part three will come about within the next week or two.
Cool. Awesome. So if we, I'm going to just head back up to the top of page 42 in the text. And so in 5:16, he's saying, in like manner, let your light shine before men, so they will see your good works, and then give homage to your Creator, which is in the community of love. And then he speaks about law. And it's interesting that there's a particular passage where he's asked a question, and he answers when they ask him about the idea of what they called law. They were actually asking about the customs of the people, but he doesn't answer the customs of the people. He speaks of what's called in Aramaic nomosa, and many men have always wanted to free themselves from the law. And there are people out there talking about how, we're free from law. We don't have any time. It's like, well, okay, if you think that's true, I want to see you at the top of Mount Everest take a step off the edge of the cliff. And that's been the dream of men forever. So Yeshua here says, think not that I come to release the ties of the Nemosa or its prophets. I come not to release the ties, but to add into your understanding of them. So he's talking about, again, law being the way things work. What he's doing is he's inviting people to understand how this whole energy system works, that they're simply definable ways of understanding principles. And if we're not willing to look at those principles, we might want to pretend that we're free of it, but there is no liberty from experiencing the effects of the way the energy system works. It's just the way it's set up. And so we're looking here to understand not that there's a burden to it. Actually, the liberty is in understanding how the energy field works. Not ignoring it and pretend that it doesn't have anything to do with you. And then he goes on and he's really clear. He says, for truly I say to you, until Shemaiah, until the heaven and earth cease to exist, not one letter, not one stroke of the way it works will cease to exist. So looking to really comprehend that. And attune to how this energy system really, truly works when function out of our created essence, our created state of being, which is that of love. So thanks for joining us. Our time is up for today. The best year yet of eternal life